Hey everybody, this is your host Jason Dean Martin, and you're listening to episode number one of the Trading Card Podcast, a podcast dedicated to the world of trading cards and memorabilia. And for today's first episode, I, along with my good buddy Ken Kinsley from Bean's Ball Card Blog, are going to review the first issue of the Beckett Vintage Collector. Came out early August, late July, and we finally got a little bit of time to sit down. We spent a little over an hour reviewing that issue, giving good and bad what we liked overall, and kind of even mingling in a few stories here and there. So take a listen. If you'd like to follow us anywhere, you can follow us on Twitter at TCardPodcast. You can email us at TradingCardPodcast@AOL.com, and you can find us on Facebook at Trading Card Podcast as well. I hope everybody enjoys it, and stick around to the end where we introduce our first song of the podcast, something we're going to do for each podcast episode, and just make sure you stick around to the end to see what that is. Enjoy.
So we're going to review the Beckett Vintage Collector today. So what did you think about it just overall?
I mean, overall, I liked it. I know that there was one back in the day, apparently, that was a little different, but I thought overall it was great. I mean, I've talked about, on my Twitter and everything, how I'm looking to maybe change how I collect and get a little bit more vintage oriented. And I just thought overall that there was a lot of good information. And as a first issue, it was a lot of good starting information on stuff.
See, for me, I liked it. I liked that it was pretty much no pricing, except for those little sidebars on it. I like that it was cover-to-cover story information. Granted, there's some ads. I mean, that's in every magazine. But I thought, it's all color. It's all material instead of pricing. And I thought, the $10 price tag, I thought maybe was a little steep at first, just compared to the thickness, I guess you get with the pricing compared to what was in this. But I thought, overall, content-wise, I thought it was pretty good. And like I said,
however, when you're looking at the price guides, though, you're looking at black and white newspaper print, as opposed to...
Right, and that's kind of what I was thinking after the fact, that it was all color, so that kind of makes up for that price.
And let's be honest, even in those ginormous price guides, what are they, like 500,000 pages each? There's very little editorial comment, little editorial content in it at all is where, that's exactly what this was. I mean, this was obviously, it looked like a lot of freelance people, a lot of people that Beckett knew throughout the hobby. And I mean, even I recall this about this time last year, I was shocked to see, Beckett is expanding in what they do on the magazine front, and they're getting out of necessarily just cards. I saw last year, I think it was like the top 100 college football players, so they have a little bit of experience with this, and they definitely made it more of a high-end magazine or, whatever you would buy, and you go to the, whether it be your Walmart, your bookstore, or whatever, and you'd still pay $7.95, $8.95 for it anyway. So the price really wasn't a deterrent anyway, shape, or form for me.
Right, and for me, my biggest complaint with the monthly Beckett's, for the sports card monthly, and then even with the sports-specific, my biggest complaint is that a lot of the articles that are in there, I've already read online.
Yeah, exactly.
They repeat, and I don't think anything in here was a repeated piece. I'm pretty sure it was all brand new material.
Yeah, I don't look at Beckett as much as you do, but definitely nothing was repeated that I knew of. I knew some of what was going to be in there, just from some Twitter chat with some of the people, like Andy Broom wrote one of the pieces in here, and obviously I, interact with him on Twitter a little bit, so I knew that he was writing something on that, but none of it, as far as I knew, was anything that had been seen before. So,
right.
Yeah, I had no real issues with it. I mean, I could have, I live in Fort Worth right now, so we have monthly card shows where Beckett sets up at, and I actually could have gotten it at half price when they set up at the actual card shows. But, I was so excited to actually see it. It was at my local Walmart, a mile from my place. So went ahead and picked it up and took a look through it. Again, $10 wasn't a big deal for me. It's not a monthly magazine. Maybe if it was a monthly magazine, you know, I don't think they're planning on going monthly, though, because it's vintage. You can only do so many articles before you start having to rehash everything.
True. You said you got yours at Walmart. Same with me. I believe, didn't this come out the week of the National?
Yeah, it actually debuted at the National, I believe. You could get it there before it actually officially hit bookshelves, but I think it was late the next weekend. It was either late the next week you could get it, or it was hitting bookshelves that, you know, end of the week of the National.
Okay, that's about when I got mine. I want to say I got mine while I was working, so it was probably during the week. I think it was the week after, so that would be first week of August, I guess, something like that.
Yeah, that sounds about when I did mine, and it was completely, I didn't even expect it to be in a Walmart.
Same here.
Because, you know, I've gone Walmarts before, and, you know, looking for the price guides at times, and they don't have them, but I think this is being marketed as an actual magazine, not a price guide, so it's being picked up in different distribution, so to speak.
Now, I know speaking with Andy on Twitter, he had said that the digital version was going to come out the week after the National, but I checked last night, but I may have checked the night before, so, you know, that's Thursday the 27th, Friday the 28th, something like that. It still wasn't available as a digital version, so I don't know. I mean, I guess I don't know what the holdup is. It's not in a negative way, but I don't know if they're having some issues or if they're waiting. Have you heard anything on your end?
No, that I to be honest, I didn't even know they were coming out with a digital. I'm definitely more of a old school. I actually like to have the magazine most of the time. So, you know, I subscribe to the Hockey OPG just because I've done a lot of online trading and selling, and I'm actually going to probably get rid of the online OPG, and I'm just more of a, you know what, I'd rather just have it.
Okay. So, well, let's talk with the cover first. What, I mean, Granny and Jackie Robinson's on the cover. Do you think that was a wise choice?
I don't think it was who I would have thought. If you'd given me one guess, it was going to be a picture of the Honus Wagner T206.
I would say Babe Ruth.
Or it was going to be Mickey Mantle. I mean, let's be, those are the two cards. When you're talking vintage cards, and vintage cards is, you know what, probably 80% baseball. You tell people vintage cards, they're going to
play
baseball. Those are the two, I mean, those are the two holy grails, so to speak. So, you know, just was, I mean, I'm not complaining that Jackie Robinson's on the cover at all. Other than that, I mean, it was kind of what I would have expected. I mean, you got, what, six pictures here, five of them are baseball. Again, pretty much what I would expect, because I really expected that it was going to be very baseball-centric.
Yeah, I did too, and not to jump the gun, but I did feel like they kind of spread it out more so than I thought they were going to.
I agree, and it was something I was going to mention later on. Just to throw it, you know, it was very across the board. Throwing back the cover, I understand why, because of value, but I will say that I do find it very interesting that the one football card on the front happened to be Joe Paterno.
Yeah, I feel like they could have picked, I mean, granted, I know that's a popular set, but, you know, the other set that they talk about is that the All-American, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, just, you know, with everything that went down with that Paterno, I mean, even if you look online, I mean, those things, some of those things are commanding thousands of dollars just because, I mean, he is who he is, and, you know, take away any of the other nonsense. He is one of the greatest college football coaches ever. It's his only football card. Well, maybe it's not his only, but, you know, how rare they are. So I get it. It just seems like it would have been something else they could have come up with.
Right. All right, so let's get to that. Let's start.
Go ahead. That's the worst complaint. We're doing okay.
Yeah, that's true. That first article, I kind of hesitate to call it an article because it went over multiple pages and multiple articles itself and sidebars. But that Fabulous 50s article, I guess the first thing that comes to my mind for that is I didn't like how it went. Let's see, it starts on page 10, I believe. Starts on page 9. 8, actually, 8 and 9 is a cover, or like a color picture layout. And it goes clear to page 20. Actually goes to page 30. But it's not a 21-page article. It's a couple pages here, a couple pages there, and I kind of, honestly, I read it and kind of had trouble finding the next page on this couple of them.
Yeah, definitely. I can't argue with that. The layout on it was definitely questionable. Now, you know, I don't know, you know, who put it together. I don't know if it was. I'm going to assume it wasn't the author, because I'm assuming all these authors are pretty much freelance, because I didn't recognize most of the names. It wasn't like it was about, you know, the usual suspects from Beckett. But, yeah, the layout on it, yeah, was definitely, it left something to be desired. All in all, I mean, I thought it was a good article. I did think it was interesting as I re-look at it now, just the original two-page spread to open it up that, of course, Frank Gifford ended up being, and, you know, one of the cards pictured, and then we just lost him within the last few weeks.
That's true. Honestly, yeah, I don't know. He was the one that was there. I kind of just went.
Maybe it's a Beckett curse. I don't know.
Can't start that already. Can't have a curse on the first magazine. But I will say overall, I agree with you. It was a pretty good article. There were a couple of little things I picked up. On page 15, when they talk about a single-player card with a stick of gum for a penny, so I did the inflation calculator. You know, that would be 10 cents today. So you'd be paying 10 cents for one card. So I guess a pack of those would be equivalent to opening day or like score football.
Yeah. You know,
so
basically,
that surprised me.
Pack, yeah.
There was.
I mean, what I liked about it all in all was, you know what, you and I are younger. We didn't grow up in the 50s. You and I grew up more in the 80s, 90s. It was nice, and even when I'm online and I'm looking at, you know, when people talk about their player collections or something, I like the stories behind them. I always love the stories, and I love seeing their personal collections. And that's kind of what this was. It was a personal story, you know, to an extent. I mean, it went bigger. It wasn't just me. But I personally love that aspect of it. You know, we've all got our stories. You and I grew up, you know, honestly, not that many miles apart and didn't know each other, but grew up in the 80s, and it was, you know, a different way of collecting. You know, we didn't live in the town, in the city, so it wasn't, you know, that we could just go down to the corner store and get them. It was, you know, in my case, it was my mom and dad getting them, or them taking me to Bailey's Grocery and buying me a few packs of cards or a single or something like that. But everybody's got their own story, and it was really interesting to hear it, especially, you know, being from a different time frame as well.
Right, I agree totally, because even today we still have the same, I guess, same differences in a way, because you're in a bigger city with shows, what, every weekend? Every other weekend, at least?
Yeah, we've got at least a couple of months.
And I, you know, I'm in West Virginia, North Central West Virginia, and I don't think we've had a show in 2015.
Set up.
Yeah, so, I agree with you. It was a very good piece, just the layout.
It was a great start. You know, if you're not going to run a piece like this in every issue of this, but,
true.
You know, it's issue one, volume one, you know, whatever, the beginning, you know, if this was the reboot, so to speak, because there was something similar in the past. It was just a great opening piece. It was well written. It was well chosen. You know how it's been there. I agree with you on the. It was definitely tough to follow. I mean, I liked some of the sidebar stories. The Red Heart dog food. I had no idea. Some of these other things, the winged weenies. And if you don't know what we're talking about, then you need to go check it out. But it was just, it was definitely interesting. And that was the only place, interestingly enough, in that first piece that got any basketball love.
Yeah, I did notice that. Talking about the winged weenies that you brought up, that little piece on 19, I thought it was interesting that they packaged the cards directly inside the pack of hot dogs.
I bet you those smell fantastic.
I can't imagine whose great, brilliant idea. I mean, bubble gum's one thing, but, you know, hot dogs and hot dog juice, I guess. That's
but all they were.
You know, that's a little different, so.
Yeah, but you weren't worried about what anything was going to be worth. All it was going to was a way
that's
to get,
true.
You know, Junior, you just wanted Junior to say, hey, Mommy, can we get these instead so I can get this card that I can either trade to my buddy, put in my bicycle spokes, or, you know, stick into a scrapbook or whatever other stereotype us young guys have of those guys that we're collecting back in the 40s and 50s.
Yep, that's true. So I talked to you earlier, and you had brought up the Mac Attack on page 30, those cards. I guess go ahead and repeat what you'd already told me.
Yeah, I mean, looking through them, and I hadn't completely read through this article yet, or I hadn't looked through the whole magazine. We'll talk about it later, but I focused on the 55 All-American piece was the first thing I read, you know, as soon as I got it. But yeah, it was interesting. We had a show in the area that's a twice-a-year show. It was a couple weeks ago, and there was one gentleman that apparently goes all over the country, and, I mean, exclusively vintage, and it's pretty much, you know, very good grade vintage. He doesn't deal in low-end stuff, but he actually had quite a few of these, and I had no idea what they were, but I just looked at them. They were kind of cool. I mean, that was interesting to see them, and I wish I took a couple pictures at his table. I asked him, I said, hey, can I take a couple pictures? You know, I might post them on my blog or something like that. I just think it's really cool, and he's like, well, he's like, how do you want to take the picture? I'm like, no, just a general picture of all. He's like, oh, okay. He didn't want to take the time. He thought I wanted him to take stuff out, but
right.
You know, there were a handful of these there, you know, and it was just, I had no idea what they were. They kind of look like, you know, the first thing you look at them, they look like pop-up cards.
Yeah, that was my thought.
But it was just really cool to see them because I had no idea what they were, and it's just interesting. You know, even you and I as kids, you know, we had cards sometimes would come in with food or with something else. The 87 Kraft Home Plate Heroes, I'm sure you had a few of those. I know I did. Never got that set completed. I think I was too short. We lived in the same area, like I said. Do you remember that bread? There was some bread that had, like, these Roberto Clemente tribute cards in them.
Yeah, it was a bread company out of Pittsburgh, and I can't remember which one it was.
Yeah, I can't remember who it was. Actually, I found some of those. I still have them, and they're actually in the plastic, so speaking of smelling well. But it was interesting to see some of this, and it kind of, again, brought back, you know, us collecting them in the 80s, 90s. It brought back some memories of, yeah, when you could get cards different ways. Literally the Cracker Jack cards from the 90s, that's probably the only time in my life I've really eaten Cracker Jacks. But I ate them to get those 91 Topps Cracker Jack cards.
Right.
You know,
same with me, and I actually still have the Bobby Bonilla from 1991 still sealed in the wrapper because I thought I was going to have a gem card because of that being sealed. But
yeah, I kept a few of them in there because you could plainly see who it was earlier.
Right.
Yeah, so I had a few of those in the day, but I'm sure I let those go when I had a mass exodus of my cards probably about 15 years ago.
So, well, let's go to it since you brought it up. I mean, that's the next article anyway. That All-American set, I mean, this is, to me, this
I
is
just,
your baby almost, so.
I'm it is, and it's a lot. It's a lot similar to the felt back that we may, you know, we'll touch on a little bit. But I actually, when I, you know, lived in Morgantown and then Pittsburgh, I've lived a lot of places. I've also lived in Indianapolis. Now I live in Texas. But at one point, I probably had 50 or 60% of this set. But then I got a promotion with my company, but I needed to come up with some money. So I ended up selling this off probably 10 years ago. And then about a year ago, probably about a year, year and a half ago, before I left Indy, the local card shop up there that I shopped at, Baseball Card Exchange, you'll actually like this story. One day I walk in there, and Glenn, who's not the owner, he's an older gentleman, but heck of a nice guy. He's like, hey, there's some cards in this binder you might like to look at. So I look in there, and I'm looking at, like, 91 Fleer, 90 Donruss. I'm like, what the hell is he thinking? Finally get there, and there's just page after page of the 55 Topps All-American. It was probably like six sheets of them. So they had some walk in, and ultimately I bought all the sheets. I think I got something like 30-something cards for like $100. You know, there were doubles, there were triples, and I think there was one I got four of. So I started working on that again. So, of course, when I knew this was going to be in there, it was going to be a baby, you know, or the article was going to be a baby of mine. But, yeah, I thought it, you know, it was just a good, you know, overall top-level thing on that. I mean, we know it's a popular set. They brought it back in, what was it, 2002 maybe? They brought it back and did it was back when Topps, you could obviously, they did college. They could do the college players in college uniforms, and then they could do the NFL.
Yeah. I'm thinking it was set up after 2004, 2005, somewhere in there. But, yeah, around that time.
I can tell you it was Avon Coburn's rookie year, whatever it was. But he was in that set.
2005.
And they also, because there was that Avon Coburn, Amos Zeraway, numbered out a 50 dual autograph that I have one of. So anyway, I digress. But yeah, I thought it was all in all, was a good article. It was interesting to see that both articles that were in there, and again, we'll talk a little bit about the felt back later on, but both of them were primarily college-based sets. You know, now it seems like nobody, but very few people care about the college aspect. They care about the pro aspect. Well, you know, there was a time where college football was much more appreciated. It was the big thing. Pro football was minimal. There, you know, you have a story, you know, I've read on Red Grange, I read a couple books on him where, you know, he was, you know, discouraged from going and playing professional football because it was thought of as dirty and football was supposed to be this more pure game. You know, and this kind of goes back to that. This is a little bit before maybe that switch to where pro football started to take over in the late 50s, early 60s. But, of course, all these players, too, you're talking a lot of these, you know, some of these players, like Niall Kinnick, had passed away like 15 years before the Fed even came out. So, yeah, I thought it was really cool. One thing I didn't know, though, was we talk about those sidebar pieces. Did you, the famous father and son part with Tom and Mark Harmon? I had no idea Mark Harmon was Tom Harmon's son.
Yeah, and for me, for somebody that isn't a big football collector except for a few players, I mean, that gives me, I guess, a connection to the set to where if I saw that card, even if it was mangled or something, I might pick it up for a few bucks just to say, you know, oh, this is so-and-so's dad, you know, from the TV show. So it kind of gives people that connection that aren't really, you know, the college football fans. And I have to say it, but Four Horsemen card, the only thing I can ever think of is wrestling. And I know there are fans, you know, but.
Yeah, well, I check in there. I mean, it's definitely a cool card. The other thing about Tom Harmon, too, I always think of, though, going back to that, is, of course, where was it? Denard Robinson, the War 98 for a couple years there for Michigan in tribute to him. So it was just
how
that happened, and they retired his number, and it just all ended up in here. But yeah, going back to that, I mean, you got the Four Horsemen card, which is the one of the most expensive. But you've got guys legendary, you know, that some people just haven't heard of. But I mean, you've got Jim Thorpe is in that, and you get people talk about Jim Thorpe being the greatest athlete ever. You've got Red Grange, you know, who I talked about a little bit ago. Just all in all, I thought it was an awesome. You know, I thought it was a good piece. It wasn't very informative, so to speak. But I guess you know that I'm more of a college football guy anyway. So that's another reason I'm drawn to it. I mean, if you're on page 42, they've got their top 10 best set. Well, it's only a 100-card set, so you got 10% of the set there. But what's interesting is, you know, you look at some of these, and like you got number 9, Spats Henry, playing at Washington and Jefferson, which obviously you know where that is.
Right.
But most people have no idea what Washington and Jefferson is, but you get guys in there. Except it's interesting to look back and see who some of these programs were at the time. You got Jim Thorpe with Carlisle. You've got Sid Luckman with Columbia. And it just shows how the game, whether it be the college and the pro game, have evolved a lot. You know, there's no guys from, you know, my alma mater, West Virginia, in there. To be honest, off the top of my head, I can't think if there's anybody in there from, like, University of Texas. So, it's just,
well,
even
when your top 10 cards from the set, you know, the biggest college today is Notre Dame, or I guess maybe Alabama, but, you know, when two of the 10 are Notre Dame, three of the 10, excuse me, are Notre Dame and Alabama. And the other ones are, you know, like you said, Washington, Jefferson, and Carlisle. I mean, that shows it's not, you know, Florida, Florida State, Miami, Oregon. You know, it's not those big colleges. So how it has shifted in, you know, what, 50, 60 years. So
it is, and it's kind of cool, too. You take Sammy Baugh, I mean, TCU. Let's be honest, 20 years ago where it was TCU, they were nowhere, but it's hard for people to remember, you know, just how good they were. You know, you got Sammy Baugh, who, let's be honest, you may not hear a lot of people say, but I will argue maybe one of the greatest football players ever. The dude played offense, defense, and punted. I think he led the NFL 1 year in passing, interceptions, and punt average, or something ridiculous like that. So, interesting, like I said, just all in all, I thought the piece was good. If you like the old vintage thing, it's just a nice little read. It's not going to teach you a whole lot, so to speak, and I don't think that was the purpose of this whole magazine in general. I think that, you know, maybe it'll be more informative, and I don't want to say hard-hitting, that's probably the wrong term, but you understand what I mean. I think going down the road, I think it'll be more informative, is where this was just kind of an introduction first piece.
Yeah, and I do like the fact that they did introduce, you know, the top 10 cars to this set, because I feel, you know, a lot of times when people talk about sets, they talk about the same thing that everybody else talks about, and not necessarily these are the cars to look for. I mean, you know, the same thing with, say, if you did a 1909, you know, the T206, everybody knows Honus Wagner, but, you know, let's add 9 out of the cards and see if people know, you know, which ones to get. So I thought that was a good touch for that article.
Yeah, I mean, are there other cards in that 09 set that, you know, there may be, okay, we talk about there's only 10 or 15 Honus Wagners, but are there only 100 of, you know, whatever other guy? You know,
right.
They said, I thought the top thing I found interesting on the top, two of the ones that weren't in the top 10 were, obviously, card number one, just because we know how early years cards were with card number one. I actually picked that up at that show a couple weeks ago. It's a $125 card. I picked up approximately a PSA -3 card for $5 just for a filler. And then I thought it was interesting the Niall Kinnick wasn't in here, because that's one that I think is a little bit shorter printed. He died in the war about 10 years before the set came out. I was kind of surprised it wasn't in there. And then especially with number 10, I feel like, just from my experience going to shows, that Sid Luckman may be one of the most common cards in the set. But, you know, whatever. It is what it is.
I mean, that's not bad if you can agree with 9 out of 10 anytime, so.
Yeah, no complaints. So, and then, of course, I like, you know, I looked over on, we moved to the Andy Broom article on the fake. What was your thoughts on that article in whole?
Honestly, my first thought was, I'm going to go on eBay and try to find one of these Pete Rose signed cards, see if there's more of these that say this is a fake. No such luck. But I do feel like this is a, you know, it's an important topic, because you look online any day, and on, when I say online, I mean eBay. When you look on eBay, there's custom patches and custom autographs, and people take special requests and special orders, and the way that we can print things now with laser printers, and I feel like this, I guess, fake article it's important. You know, I feel like they should maybe focus on this every month, and even if they took a page or two and showed examples.
That's exactly what I was thinking, because if you follow, you know, I know you follow Andy on Twitter. For others that don't, that listen to this, it's Broome, Broome, with a view. Interesting. But anyway, you know, he will go and he does online, you know, or live grading. I mean, he was at the National. He was the same weekend I talked about, 2 weekends ago, I talked about the local show. I was hoping to meet him, but he wasn't here local. He was in New York at White Plains. He will, on his Twitter, you've seen it, I'm sure, a lot of times, he'll be like, oh, this is a fake, and he'll take a picture of it. And, you know, sometimes he gives a good description. Sometimes he, you know, doesn't have time to, because he is there to work and not tweet. But, so, yeah, I actually agree with exactly what you're saying. I mean, it was, for me, it was one of those, it was nice. I like that it was in there. I agree with what you're saying on a lot of points, but, and this isn't necessarily a criticism, because it would be hard to do, but it wasn't too informative, just because there's so many potential fakes out there. There are so many things you would have to look for. So it was hard, but it was definitely from that standpoint of, you know, a first issue. It was, you know, these are some big things, you know, talking about that Babe Ruth one. What was it? He said something on there about, well, at least they used the right address on it or something like that.
Right.
But all in all, yeah, I did think it was very good. It was interesting. But, you know, talking about, you're even talking online or eBay. eBay is the online method for cards. You know, that's the thing about it. It's just so tough because you can't, you know, he talks a lot in there. You know, you have to understand the card stock. You have the paper stock from that time. You can't do that online. You've already bought at that point. Somebody shady in the state, you're done. So, you know, for vintage, too, I think, you know, going the whole thing, it's going to be easier or better to do it in person. And that's even the aspect I'm taking on the All-American set, is I want to complete that pretty much either on person or maybe do some online trading, but I don't want to go on eBay and buy these cards. I want to buy them in person, unless I'm going to buy something that's already graded so that I know it's legit.
Right. And I thought it was nice to bring up, where it says, former MLB player Jay Johnstone was even the victim of that fake Rose card. Because I've heard stories, and it's, you know, pretty unbelievable how many got out and into the market, I guess you could say. But I've just heard stories of, you know, way back for we collected cards, all these counterfeit Rose cards that got out there, and for him to accept payment of those rookie cards and to find out that they were fake, you know, I thought that was interesting. I've never myself, at least knowingly, bought a fake, but I've never purchased a card, you know, that would be, somebody would want to make a fake counterfeit, you know, version of. I was just going to say, I can only imagine how that would feel, you know, for especially for him that had 10 of them.
Yeah, I can't even. I mean, the closest thing I would have done is, you know, and it's not really touched on in here, although it could have been with Andy being, you know, the vintage grader. There was a time, you know, when in West Virginia there were more card shows back in the 90s where I was trying as much as a teenage kid could. I wanted to put together the 1971 Topps baseball set. So I probably never bought any fakes, but you know darn well that I probably bought some that were Sharpied or cut or something like that, and I wasn't smart enough to realize it at the time with those brutal black borders that they had.
Oh, yeah.
I had a really nice looking Richie Allen, which is one of the short prints. Boy, it was really nice looking, and that's all I'm going to say. I don't know if it was touched up or not, but, you know.
Just better than internet.
Yeah, it's gone now, so I will never know, and I'm probably better off that way. But yeah, I don't spend, you know, I'm not buying, for the most part, I'm not buying high-end enough cards and I'm worried about it. When I do go to those All-Americans and I need to get the Four Horsemen or whatever, I will probably either go to somebody, I have a couple guys locally that do have some of that stuff that I trust, or gentlemen that, you know, kind of, they know their vintage. That's what they do. They don't do the new stuff. So, you know, I'll either go to them or perhaps something that was graded or whatever, because yeah, it's a legitimate concern. It's always gonna be, and you know, if you're a more paycheck to paycheck person and you don't have a huge bank account, then you've got to worry about it even more, because percentage wise, you go put a couple thousand dollars into a card and it turns out to be fake. That's a lot of dinners.
Yeah, and to go from a couple hundred bucks to zero in 2 seconds, you know, and that's gonna hurt for a little bit. So. What do you think about that next article with the strip cards? I guess my first question for this, did you read that whole article?
I did read through it. I mean, there's a lot of info. I mean, I'm looking at it right here. You've got paragraph W501.
It's overwhelming.
It's very overwhelming. To be honest, I didn't know a whole lot about these strip cards, so it was definitely interesting. What I'd like to see, you know, hoping they will do, because, you know, I plan to buy every issue of this that comes out just for personal knowledge, a library, whatever you want to say, you know, that if I decide I want to do something, I can go back and look at it later.
Right, and I feel as if this isn't a magazine that I would throw away once I get the next one.
No, and I used to, as a kid, I used to keep every Beckett because I thought it was going to be worth $50, you know, 20 years down the road. Surprisingly, it's not. But, yeah, I don't keep, you know, my old price guides anymore. Not that I buy a ton, but when I do, as soon as I get an updated one, I toss the old one.
Right.
But, yeah, this is something where down the road, you know, maybe each issue, you know, you start with W, you know, whatever, and whether you go, you know, numerically or whatever you do, I think it'd be interesting to sit there and read, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 pages on a set, you know, what cards are short printed, you know, little things that, yeah, I can pick that up by looking at the vintage almanac that I bought a couple weeks ago, but that's kind of boring. If I can read it in this with pictures and all that kind of stuff, yes, I'm a guy that needs pictures. I think it would be a lot more interesting. But it was very, like you said, it was very overwhelming. There was a lot, there's a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah, to me, this was the article that I had to come back to more than once just because it was, you know, very much, here's this, here's the title, here's this, here's the title, you know, and it just kept going, and it, there was no flowiness to the next piece. It was just boom, 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 facts, 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 and it was just, you know.
It was almost, it was written as a story, but it almost could have been bullet pointed.
Right, and it it could have been a 3-month piece, maybe.
Yeah. But, you know, and as we talk about that, and I don't know if you've got anything to add on that, but if as you go past that, then you go W514, the king of the strip card steps, and there's a complete gallery of all those cards.
Yeah,
you know, that. A nice little, it's just a one piece, right? But so maybe that is the plan on what they want to do on that, because I thought that was nice. Like I said, it's really only a one-page write-up, and then I think 4 pages, 5 pages of a gallery. But it's only 100 card sets, or I think it was. So it was. It's really cool to see that. So maybe that is the game plan. I think that would be fantastic if it was.
Yeah, and granted, it was. It's one article in the whole magazine that was like that, that had that format. Not a big deal, but like we just said a few minutes ago, if it's a reference magazine, that's perfect. You know,
yeah,
it's not that I'm going to read 100 times, but if I need it to see, you know, what year was this and what set was that, it's perfect.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more. So, like I said, maybe hopefully they will do kind of what we were talking about, because when you move on and see that gallery, which is really cool. And then for people that haven't looked at it yet, I thought what was cool when they did that gallery, maybe I'm going far ahead of where you were, I thought it was cool that the little side piece, the 7 of the 8 Men Out that was in it, I just thought that was a nice little touch of something for them to put in there. And I will say that those guys do not look like the guys on the movie. That's all I know.
They never do. But also, beside what you're saying is the variation 4, I like that they have that, you know, again, for reference. You know, it's
absolutely
right there. I don't have to go somewhere else and find it. So.
Yeah, absolutely. It's no different than, you know, for me doing hockey when we do photo variations, you know, and I'm sure they do it in baseball and everything else, but hockey tends to have a lot of photo variations. Obviously, the one short print, well, which one is it? I mean, we know they released the checklist, but you've got to go somewhere to find that checklist.
Right.
No, they're not. I'm sure there's a site somewhere, but it's probably not too easy to find the variation 4 online, is where we know that if it's the 2014-15 product, I'm just going to Cardboard Connection.
Right.
And there's going to be a gallery right there for me. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought it was a nice touch. Again, I didn't know that much about strip cards. Definitely if I just looked at them, I would have just thought they were like T206 cards or T2 something. I mean, not necessarily 06. I have an idea of what the 06 look like, but I would have just thought they were normal tobacco cards.
Right. It's an additional look.
And isn't this the ones that they said, like, they don't really know where they came from? Or who produced them? Yeah. Interesting.
I don't know where that is in there, but I do remember that there's
not
a lot
of paragraph. For instance, a simple question, who produced them? Simple answer, for the most part, nobody knows.
Right.
Well, that's straight to the point.
So you brought up hockey. Not too bad. And then that Beehive article was next, so.
It was interesting. we talked about it earlier, you know, I just got back into hockey probably in the last 5 years or so. I was into it a lot when I was in my teens. I was into everything when I was in my teens, but there was a lot less to choose from. But, yeah, there was a beehive set, you know, probably within the last 10 years, and I came across a couple packs in one of those Target or Walmart bee packs. And didn't know. They seemed kind of awkward. I didn't really understand what they were. And even as a guy who does hockey and hopefully getting into a little bit more vintage hockey, it was interesting to see this. But similar to what we talked about earlier with the hot dogs or whatever, it was beehive corn syrup. You save the labels and you send them in with whatever the price was, 50 cents, 10 cents, something like that. And you could get a photo. And it seems like they're more like, if I was understanding it correctly, they're almost like matted photos more than cards, so to speak. But you could pick what player you wanted and stuff like that. And it talks about, you know, the stars, while, you know, they have their value because they're stars, they're Gordie Howe or whoever the case may be, Gump Worsley. There's a lot more of those than there are, you know, that sixth defenseman or whatever out there. So a lot of those stuff retaining their value is collectors have tried to put sets together and have realized how scarce, you know, some of them are. So I just thought it was an interesting, you know, there wasn't a lot on hockey in the magazine, which, to be honest, I didn't expect. I was kind of surprised to even see a piece. I figured it would be, you know, baseball-centric with some football and then a little bit of basketball and then maybe a hockey mention. A little bit different. We didn't really get any basketball in there. I got one hockey article, a couple football, and the rest was baseball or just general. So, yeah, it was an interesting informative piece. You know, now at least I know a little bit more if I'm at a card show and I have a better idea of what I'm looking at.
Right, and again, even going back to the strip cards and that All-American set, you know, again, they put a gallery in here. You know, they put, I don't even know, probably 30 examples of these cards and kind of what to look for and what borders they have. And, you know, again, for reference, I mean, I can't say that enough with this whole magazine. Having these galleries is awesome.
Which, again, going back to when we talked about the price, okay, well, maybe we could have done this in, you know, black and white newsprint, but, you know, it wouldn't be as effective for what you're saying as far as, you know, maybe a gallery or a reference.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And I honestly never thought about it like that. And then this page 7273 that has the gallery on it, I mean, that right there is a perfect example because there's a wood grain border, a blue border, and then like a, I don't know, an off-white border, I guess you could say. You know, so
but then, that border count.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, it's, like I said, just kind of bringing it all together. It definitely feels like it was the right choice. So, yeah, like I said, I mean, it's probably something, to be honest, now that I know what they are. If I see one that's in low grade at a card show and I can get it for $10, I'll probably do that. A couple weeks ago, I picked up, there was a guy from Wichita down here. He literally had one hockey card at his table, and it was, a second or third year Parkhurst, and it was a Blackhawks card. He wanted $10 for it. So I said, you know what, that's cool. It's the old Blackhawks sweater. I'll pick it up. And, you know, now I know kind of what I would be looking for, so to speak, or at least what it is, because, I mean, if you look at them, they almost really don't look like cards, to be honest, other than
yeah.
The wood grains. They almost look like stickers from back in the day or something like that. But
the ones that have the wood grain almost look like they're framed. They don't look like just photo prints or whatever you want to call them, but they look like they're already framed. And actually, the ones I'm looking up in the top left-hand corner, it looks like maybe the blue, it looks like they're printed, one single sheet, and then it looks like the black and white that's on the off-white, that actually doesn't, they don't look printed. To me, they look like they're glued on
almost
the paper.
Almost photo.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's definitely something, like I said, you know, as I go to shows now, I've changed how I'm going to collect, and pretty much everything I buy going forward is going to be PC. I don't want to buy stuff thinking I can trade it to somebody or I can make a quick buck, because if a quick buck could be made, then probably the other guy would have made the quick buck. But, you know, so now I have more time where I'm spending just looking through stuff, and it'll be something where, you know, maybe I'll keep a little bit more of an eye out for these just to pick one up, and I'm in Dallas. So if the local guy that has it, there's not a lot of market for it around here, I might be able to get it cheaply.
Okay.
I thought the when we go over to the serial searchers, you know, it's an interesting concept. I mean, you know, you talk about the cards, and there's a lot of information on the cards in there, but I thought what was really interesting was almost back to the opening article, how he took his own personal frame of reference, how he knew that little girl whose mom worked there. So, you know, he had a lot of those. I just thought the whole thing of that, it personalizes these articles, and it, you know, we're talking a lot of it in our hobby. It seems like a lot of people are just worried about money. You know, they've lost, a lot of people have lost focus on the fun aspect, and that's kind of when it was fun, when you and I might take cards to school and trade with other kids, which I did. I figure you did.
Yeah.
It was kind of, again, a nostalgia. You know, I'm getting into my late 30s, so it's kind of a, oh, I remember when I was a kid. I'm starting to get there already. So.
Right, and for me, I'm not going to go into a whole lot of detail about it, but about the article, but for me, it did bring back that whole just nostalgia part, because I remember getting, you know, the cards out of Post cereal. I remember getting the cards out of the Hostess cupcakes. And I never even ate those cupcakes, but I bought them to get the cards. You know, I can remember the design.
The border or something?
Yep. They had the blue border, bluish purple kind of. You know, I can remember these designs, and, you know, the 91 Post had, like, the yellow border, and I still kind of look, when I go to Walmart or to a grocery store, you know, I look to see if any cereal or anything like that every once in a while will have cards, and I can't remember the last time that cereal had baseball cards.
It's just because of the way sports has turned into such a big business. They're the MLBPA or whoever's not going to make enough money off of it to justify it. So, unfortunately, I think probably the days of those are probably over. I hope I'm wrong, but I fear I'm not.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that one. So, did you have any of these 1970 3D Post cards? Or no, Kellogg's?
No,
No,
I feel like I've seen them, you know, every once in a while at a show, but I can't say that I had any of them. My uncle, who doesn't collect cards anymore, but had a very nice collection, had, you know, the run of Tops probably from about 55 till probably when he stopped in around 99. I don't even recall seeing those in his collection. I mean, like I said, he had a very impressive collection of sets, high grade, still has them, but I don't even think he had those. Now, it might just be he didn't want to have them if he wasn't worried about it. But, yeah, I think I've seen them at shows, but that's about the height of it. I didn't know that they were even Kellogg's cards, to be honest.
Yeah, I forgot that Kellogg's did cards. I actually was thinking Post just because that's what I grew up with. But, you know, again, they show a gallery, and I thought that was pretty useful. I actually think that 1970 Tommy Harper, I think that might actually be one that I try to get just because –
Yeah.
How many Seattle Pilots cards are actually out there?
Well, I mean, and I kind of could have told you what the Pilots hat looks like, and I know that company we both used to work for, at one point they brought the Pilots hats back and you could buy them, but to be honest, I don't think I'd ever seen the jerseys until just now, because I hadn't even paid that much attention to it in detail when I looked at it before. But, yeah, the jersey's kind of interesting as well.
Yeah, and I like that there's a Mark Fidrich on anybody's top 10. You know, granted, that's a rookie year. I wouldn't call it a rookie card, but it's a rookie year. So. So I'm thinking let's go to the, where's it at?
No horsing around with the horsing around stuff.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking maybe every picture tells a story.
Now you got me. Every picture tells a story. It was interesting, but it wasn't anything for me. And we talked about it, even we kind of skipped over the horse racing and we skipped over the memorabilia auction part. But, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely more of a card guy, like the photo thing, just didn't really do anything for me. I mean, I kind of understood what they were talking about, but wasn't really my thing.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. I didn't realize that there were so many types. I mean, to me, it's been color and black and white, you know. So I didn't realize that there were so many types. But, you know, like you're saying, I'm not going to buy a photo unless I need it for, you know, a presentation on a shelf. You know, I'm not going to buy a photo for any other reason other than that, I don't think. So.
Yeah, I guess it's different. I mean, talk about, you know, each generation. I think they call them type 1, type 2, type 3, type 4. But each generation, it's no different than if I take a photo of a photo and post on Facebook, obviously. It's,
right.
You know, a little more grainy every time. You know, the color's not as sharp and all that. I mean, it was interesting, but, yeah, just photos aren't, you know, anything. But I just think it was really cool, the picture. Was that Ruth from his last game? Is that what that said, I believe? Picture on 104, I believe it said. Yeah, Babe Ruth final appearance. So I thought it was a cool picture to see, though. I mean, no complaints there.
Yeah, I mean, that one always is. And I will say, photos are nice to have if you're trying to match up a game used item. But to me, that's, you know, about as far as it would go. I have a few photos in my, you know, my Josh Ball collection. I have some photos, but honestly, I have photos because I ran out of cards to collect. So it's not really something I'm interested in.
And that's kind of where I am with Andrew Shaw. I've started looking into, and I haven't bought any yet, but photos where he's holding up the Stanley Cup. And we're not even talking about generations of photos there. I'm not even worried about that. It's just more
right.
Something, because like we talked about, even on our on the blog that we both write on, and if y'all don't know what that is, that's at Beans, B-E-A-N-S, B card blog. But, you know, we've got it pinned at the top, you know, our super collector item and our super collector piece that Jason put together, and you just can't, at a certain point, there's just nothing to get anymore. So I agree completely with what you're saying, and I have gone through times where I've looked for, you know, Andrew Shaw. And, again, it's usually the stuff where he's holding the Stanley Cup.
Right. I mean, that's going to be the most popular no matter what. So what did you think about the next article, the top spelt cards?
I liked it. It was informative. Again, going back to even with the All-American, it's definitely for me. I like it because of college, a little bit more college-based. It got me looking into just what some of these things were going for on eBay. Again, we talked about how it's not a price guide, but when you're on pages 114, 115, they've got the checklist with the prices. I mean, you've got a $2,000 book value Joe Paterno card.
Hey, let me stop you right there for a second, because I was going to ask you later, but you're already talking about it. So when these say, you know, rookie card, and it says rookie card for 95% of these, so do you consider this a rookie card?
Yes, but also with the disclaimer that I'm going to ask you, let's be honest, what makes a guy's first card any more valuable than his second, third, fourth year card?
Well, I guess my question wasn't correctly stated. Mine was more of, do you consider it a rookie card because of, I guess, the size, the fact that it's not, you know, the typical material.
Yeah, I mean,
this is like the MLB chips for me.
See, I don't necessarily agree with that. I mean, part of it, I'm sure, that while people are going to consider them rookies, part of it has to do is at least they were produced by Topps. Now, I know Topps did some of those attacks chips or something, and I know when we were in our teens, Pogs became popular, and there were player Pogs, but they weren't made by Topps or Donruss or Fleer. They were some.
Right, they were licensed.
You know,
I mean,
yeah, they were licensed, but they were made by somebody completely else. I think, yes, you have to consider them, but I think also you have to look at the fact that there weren't really in 1949, there weren't really. I mean, you had Leaf was in 48. I don't remember if Leaf even had a set in 49. They may have, but you're looking at just a different era, so you do have to treat it slightly differently. But I just thought, all in all, it was interesting. It was informative. I've had somebody a few years ago tell me that if I like the All-Americans, I should look into these, and never put too much thought into it, but I probably will in time. You know, I like that Doak Walker's in there, a big college football guy. Obviously, he's got the running back award named after him, so that's kind of a cool piece. My local card shop over here has a couple of old Bowman Doak Walkers for like $40, so I do want to pick those up at some point. So, you know, you've got guys in here like Darryl,
West Virginia.
Came ahead. I'm sorry?
I was going to say, did you notice there's a guy from West Virginia?
I feel like somebody told me that, but I didn't notice it. Who was it?
It's on the right side, and it's the red towards the bottom, third row up. Pete Zinich or something like that. It's a guy from WVU. And that actually, you know, we're both from Morgantown area. I've never heard that name.
Yeah, where was it again?
Third row up on the red, but like the maroon red.
Third row. Yeah, never heard that name before, but that must be why somebody was saying something about it, because I commented on, you know, they're not being a West Virginia guy and All-American. So, yeah, that then, well, now I know what I'll be doing once we finish this off. I have to go. I got a little bit in my PayPal account, so I've been selling off some cards, so I may have to go take a look for that, maybe a low-graded one I can get for a few bucks. But that is one of the things on there. Like you said, you've never heard of that guy. I have read a lot of West Virginia football history books. I honestly don't recall that name.
Right.
And that is the thing that they actually mention in here, is that you do have some definitely questionable low-end names, but again, at the same time, you've got Doak Walker, Joe Paterno, Darryl Royal, obviously Paterno Royal, known better as head coaches, but still an interesting thing. And going back to, even if you don't want to consider them cards, I mean, that's fine. I mean, most people do, but if nothing else, let's look at them from the aspect of it's something like maybe you would see on American Pickers. It's still history at some level.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing is, that guy that we just talked about from WVU, that might very well be his only collectible.
I'm going to bet it is.
Like that, I'm going to go after it. If I'm you and I'm a WVU fan, I'm going to go after it, card or not, rookie card or not, you know, whatever. But, you know, my hesitation is to call them rookie cards. But I guess that I'm typecasting, so.
Yeah, and I'm a little bit more in advance. Whether it's a rookie card or not doesn't matter. I only have one Frank Askey card. It's a 55 Bowman, but I want to get more. But he has quote unquote cards that are like Sunoco, and they're like off size. So is it a card? Is it not?
Right.
Get a lot of that from back in the day based on size or distribution or whatever. So, you know, it's all semantics. It's, you know, you like it or you don't.
Right. So that last article in there, besides the one that talks about Jim Beckett, that article, what's it called here? Tough to Ink.
Tough Ink.
Yeah, or Tough Ink.
There was one particular thing that I absolutely loved about that article, but I want to get your – what are your thoughts first?
Okay.
And what did you like, not like?
Personally, this article is probably my favorite in the entire magazine, just because I've always been an autograph chaser, you know, in person, through the mail, at Giant Eagle signings, you know, whatever. If it's free or obtainable, I'm probably going to get it, or at least try. You know, so for me, this was a great article. I've actually started a couple autograph sets, and I've quit them just because of money, time, people were too expensive. For example, one of the sets I tried was a 2001 Fleer Legacy for baseball. Meaning it has an Albert Pujols and an Ichiro rookie. Granted, there's autographed versions of the Pujols, but I'm never going to shell out that kind of money. You know, so
yeah.
For me it was, okay, well, I might as well stop now. I'm only 20% in, so... But to see that other people actually do it and what they take into consideration, you know, with death, affordability, and, you know, just if this guy signs and this guy doesn't, you know, it was interesting to see what other people think about.
Yeah, it was, you know, and, I mean, granted, I believe, if I remember correctly, didn't he live in one of the bigger cities, the author? So he was able to get a lot of these as a kid. So that changes that dynamic from, you know, where you are, where, okay, yeah, I'm sure you went to plenty of Pirates games as a kid, but getting an autograph in the 80s or 90s was different than getting an autograph in the 70s. But yeah, I do agree with what you said. Okay, so I will, if I take out the two football pieces, this was my favorite article. But what I found so interesting and where I would love to see this continue is like maybe a piece that continues. If he breaks down each of the sets more, because what I found so intriguing, other than the Bob Bailey autograph card, which I guess is an inside joke for you and I, how he had talked about, and he spent a lot of time in the article where, you know, you only had a limited amount of time, unfortunately, say Roberto Clemente, you know, when he died. So for that last year, you know, and I found some of that very intriguing. And to be honest, I went on and Googled some of those names that even if I hadn't heard of them, I was just curious what would happen to them that while they were still in their playing age, you know, that they passed away. You know, and even you did it on the blog with the, you didn't put the full story in there, but the card of the day, who was it again? Lyman Bostock.
Oh, yeah, and I actually have one of his autographs because I actually heard about him and what happened. So that was kind of my thought as to, you know, okay, how much do I have to put out? And then it became a goal. And I have an autograph. Mm-hmm. It's not authenticated, but, you know, to me it looks pretty legit. So, you know, something like that is, I guess, what this guy's talking about exactly.
Yeah, it's, you know, and maybe it wasn't that particular year, maybe it was a card from 5 years earlier, but, you know, still the fact that he passed away in, what was it, 78, 79, something like, I know it was still in the 70s, and I'd heard about that story long before you had put it on there, but I feel like there was an ESPN article or something on it back in the day, a nice long write-up maybe a year or two ago. But yeah, that was what I found fascinating about it was, you know, I mean, I hate to say that I find death fascinating because I don't, but just the interesting that if you want to try to do the complete set of these, and especially, you know, the further and further back you get, the tougher and tougher it's going to be. Is it Neshek? Which baseball player is it that's trying to do the 86 Tops sign? Is it Neshek?
I believe so.
Oh.
Pat.
Yeah. Yeah, he's trying to do that, and I think he's darn near close if he's not done with it. But, yeah, it's just an interesting concept of something to, you know, try and do. And obviously the further removed you get from it, the tougher it's always going to be and the more expensive it's going to be. So, yeah, I thought it was a great piece, and to be honest, you know, the only thing after it, the interesting is I'm flipping through, I found it interesting where he talked about the manager cards from, I believe, that 72, no, whatever year it is, it has the manager and then it has the coaches on it as well. And
the multiple.
A couple teams where, yeah, he's never seen a completed one. It's just really intriguing. Like, if somebody tried to do that online and had a Twitter, I would follow that and I would look at that steadily. There's actually a guy that's writing a book. He opened a pack of 86 Tops cards. I think I told you about it. I can't remember what the Twitter handle was, but he opened a pack of 86 Tops cards, hadn't opened cards in years, had been out of it, and has decided he's a professor somewhere, but this summer he decided to make the – he's trying to find every person living that was in that pack and get them to hand-sign that card.
Wasn't one of them Carlton Fisk?
Yep. I think that was one of his tougher ones. Didn't he end up having to catch him in Cooperstown or something? Yeah, there were a couple
Something like that, but I knew Fisk was, you know, one of the tougher ones. I'm just glad he didn't have, you know, Barry Bonds or somebody like that in there, because that would have been.
Gooden, if I remember correctly, Gooden was one, and he wanted money.
Which one was it?
Dwight Gooden, if I'm correct. I believe he wanted money. But yeah, he's actually going to write a book on that, so I think that's going to be, that's really cool. You know, even if you're not that into baseball, if you're into another sport, just the concept of it and the fun of it. But yeah, I thought that was a, you know, then there was in the magazine, there was the interview with Dr. Jim Beckett. It was a nice way to round it out. But all in all, I was pretty happy with it. I'm pretty excited to hear about another one coming out. I'm going to imagine here in the next few months, we'll see another one roll out.
Yeah, I want to go back to that autograph article, though, because something that happened to me and I didn't even realize until I read this article, you know, I've written that my favorite set is 1990 Topps, you know, and there's boatloads of those cards out there. And I actually started an autograph set of that year, and I have 25 or 30. They're kind of stashed away, and I kind of stopped. I'll pick it up again one day. But I didn't even realize until I read this article, the guys that have died since I started collecting and then since I stopped. I mean, there's guys, Tony Gwynn, you know, that has, I think, two cards in that set. Kirby Puckett.
Yeah. I couldn't even think of who else. Those would be,
you know, and I know it never even clicked that that card went from $10 to 50 or 60, you know, now just because he died. So
yeah, if you're trying to get like an 86 Donnie Moore or an 87 Donnie Moore,
right.
I'm not sure when he had his incident, where you've got, you know, you've had a handful of them, you know, even current athletes in the last, or baseball players, athletes in general, in the last few years. I mean, I know the Cardinals, Darrell Kyle, I don't think he would have quite, I think he was like a rookie in like 92, so
91.
He probably wasn't in that
set.
91? Okay. So, I mean, that would be another one where, you know, yeah, it would be tough and you would have to find that. I mean, hopefully you would think that nobody would be thinking along the lines of I need to fake that on a 91, but stranger things have happened, unfortunately. Shadier things have happened.
Right, definitely, definitely. So overall, I mean, you just said it yourself. It was pretty good. Pretty good magazine for the price, $10. Any idea if this is monthly?
I'm sorry?
Any idea if this is monthly, every month, have they said?
No, I haven't heard that it's monthly. I'm thinking there's probably another one going to come out before the end of the year. You know, you kind of, like I said, though, if you think it all the way through, you almost have to space it out because there only is so much you can write about because there's no new cards. I mean, all you can do is you could have another author rehash something new 4 years down the road, which I would still be interested in to hear somebody else's take or observation. But, yeah, there's only, you know, so much you can do.
Right, and I do feel like, you know, I hate to beat it into the ground again, but, you know, we kept talking about the galleries and how happy we were that they were in there. You know, that could be something, I don't want to say it's filler. I mean, it could be, but I don't really consider it filler. But, I mean, you know, some of these errors or some of these counterfeits that we're talking about or, you know, anything like that, I feel you could spend just with the Pete Rose era, the Jordan era, I'm sure there's the Ripken errors, you know, that's 5, 6, 10 pages if you do it right, put some pictures in there. So I feel like, granted, every month might be too much, but even I would at least like to see this every other month.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. Or, you know, at worst, maybe quarterly, maybe every third month. I mean, I'd like to see it more often because obviously I'm going to get through it. Depending on what I've got going on, I'm going to get through it in a couple weeks, you know, so.
Right.
It would be nice to see more, but yeah, I believe there's, from what I've heard, I believe there's another one that should be out by the end of the year.
So let's do a rating on this. So let's do the Beckett rating. Let's do out of 10. What would you give the magazine?
I mean, I will say this: if I rank anything in life, I never give the total number. I'm never gonna. You're almost never gonna get me to give a 10. I did notice one typo in there. I forget where it is. It's pretty bad. I showed the lady, and I kind of had a
four.
Oh, okay. So you noticed more than I did, and I'm a grammar Nazi. I mean, I have a journalism degree, so yeah, I only noticed one. But I would say that, you know, I didn't like some of the other stuff, but I understand. You know, we talked about the horse racing and the auction stuff. I'm gonna say overall, out of a 10, I'll give it an 8. I was pretty happy with it, but maybe I don't have the highest standards. But, you know, it'll be more interesting to see how 4, 5, 6 episode issues down the road, how it looks, because this was kind of a first issue. So you wanted to be a little bit more general maybe in some of your pieces.
Right. I mean, for me personally, I would give it, we'll say, an 8.5. The typos, it's just something that bothers me. You know, I feel like if it's that big of a company, I know people are going to have them, but I feel like how many times were these articles read? You know, there shouldn't be typos, but, you know, content, and it's all original from what I'm aware of. You know, I can't complain, but like I said, the typos threw me a little bit, and then, you know, there was no basketball, really. So I'm not a big basketball guy.
See, but for me, that probably adds a story, to be honest.
You know, so that's something they need to add. Even if it's,
I do agree though, because there is a lot of vintage basketball. I was really surprised to see a hockey piece, even though it was shorter than some of the others, and not see a basketball.
Right. Even just a general article of a key set. You know, even if it was the 86 Fleer set, which I know is not really vintage, but, you know, we are talking 30 years ago now, so it's not vintage by what people categorize it as, but 30 years is a long time. So even that, you know, there's guys, Jerry West, George Gervin, I mean, there's some key cards, so I was really surprised not to see anything.
So you still haven't given us your ranking.
Oh, yeah, you missed it. I said 8.5.
Okay.
That
yeah, we're the same. I was pretty happy with it. Again, you know, I'll probably be a little bit more critical down the road. I mean, I'd like to see more detail. I'd like to learn more because I am interested in this. You know, it may not be a magazine that for the diehard guy that's been collecting vintage for 30 years. It may not be useful, so to speak. But for somebody like you and I who have been more modern, you know, it's definitely an interesting change and an interesting read, and it's not a normal, typical Beckett.
Right, and for me, like I said, half a point is the typos. The other point for me is the lack of basketball. If it wasn't for that, I would give it a 10 easily, just because it's different.
And I love that it wasn't a price guide, because, and again, this is me. If you want a price guide, you know what? I just bought the weekend. There were two shows here that weekend. So at the second show that wasn't twice a year, at the show that was my monthly show, I bought the new vintage almanac that came out. Well, you know the good thing about a vintage almanac? You don't have to buy it every year.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, so I bought it. You know, I'm going to go through. And, of course, I've already made a mistake and, you know, poured a soda on it. But, yeah, I mean, I'm going to go through, and I don't have to buy it every year, so I've got a price guide. I don't need, you know, and it's got all sports in it, so I don't need to subscribe to all 37 OPGs that Beckett has. So, yeah, I'm pretty set up.
You know what? That may have been their thinking. That may have been their thinking as to why there wasn't really any sort of pricing in this. I mean, how often do those prices really change?
Yeah, they don't. I mean, that's actually, you know, we didn't talk about it, but as far as vintage, you know, things aren't going to change. Those guys' careers are over. We know if they're a Hall of Famer. We know if they're a bum. We know if it's a short print. We know if it's conditioned sensitive. We know this information now. So the prices really don't change. One thing that I have had a little conversation with the guy at the local clerk shop, though, on is they do change a little, or no, it was actually Andy Broom. I asked about it on Twitter because I mentioned Frank Gatsby, who's 55 Bowman. Card books, it's either 40 or 60. I can't remember. I think it's 40. But there are people asking on eBay $120 for ungraded copies. And he told me that the reason is because of the grading aspect. They are saying or thinking, oh, this is going to grade an 8, so, you know, I'm going to ask more for it. Maybe it grades a 9, you know.
Right,
I don't
they're
know the
adding
that
multiplier in there.
So, I mean, it changes the price a little bit, and that's maybe made some of the prices go up. But let's be honest, as long as grading's been popular now, it's not like it's a new thing, so it shouldn't affect them too much more. If anything, you know, they should really stay the same, and I think that those are going to be things that, you know, if/when the card market, you know, has a lull again, the vintage should try to retain a good portion of their value, again, because if nothing else, they're historical, as well as just sports cards.
Right. So overall, you said an 8.5?
I said 8. I'll give it an 8.
You gave it an 8. I gave it an 8.5. I would say that's a pretty good overall rating for the first issue. We're not sure if it's monthly, bi-monthly, or quarterly, so I guess we'll figure that out eventually. But all in all, anything else you want to add to that?
No, I mean, obviously, if I hear anything, you know me, I'll tell you, and then I'll put it on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter. It's Ken, K-I-N, underscore, Kinsley, K-I-N-S-L-E-Y. And then also the blog that Jason and I write for is Beans, B-E-A-N-S, B-Card blog. And you can find us on there, and we just write about anything and, you know, mail days, fun stuff, stuff we find interesting. And I'll put it on there, too, if I hear anything else, because I have a feeling it's not stuff that is interesting.
All right, as promised, here is our first song of the podcast for episode number one. It's My Oh My from Macklemore and Ryan Lewis. Enjoy.
Dad in the garage, the sawdust, that pine salt in the moss. Around every spring, when the winter thaw, we'd huddle around the radio, twist the broken knob. 7:10 a.m., no KJR. Dave Lee House's voice would echo throughout the yard. Couldn't have been older than 10, but to me and my friends, the voice on the other end might as well have been God's. 1995. The division series, Eggers at the bat, bottom of the 11th inning, got the whole town listening, swung on and belted, the words distorted, Joy Corps around third, here comes Griffey, the throw to the plate, not in time, my oh my, the Mariners win it, yes, fireworks, they lit up that ceiling in the King Dome, we had just made history.
That's one out of line, that one field high for a base hit. Here comes Joy, here is Junior to third base, they're going to wave him in, the throw to the plate.
Woven, barely holding that stitch. Creases of time amongst the grime and the grit. Where the leather used to pound his fist. To some it's just a mitt, but see that glow is him. Yep, tell me stories on the field with that sun-stained rim. Blood under my chin, he taught me how to spit. Sunflower seeds back with me and my crew. Sunburnt arms, big league shoe. Yeah, we were like the sandlot after dinner. After practice we listened to the M's in the kitchen. And if mine wasn't tripping, come on dad. Please, I swear this one more inning. Voice would pump, pump through the system. Break out the rye. Bread. It's grand salami time, my oh my, another victory, yes, my city, childhood, my life, watching Griffey right under those lights. That light rain, demon in that night game. Can't stop now, keep moving, no break pads. Came here to prove a point, live my life on the field, make history in between the base pad, and compete against the fear that is in me. That's my only barrier, and I swear that I'ma break that. From the mud, the cleats that we drug through the feet. This is that moment, and you cannot take it back. And I don't really collect cards anymore, just a box and some old cardboard. Memories embedded in the dust, and the fibers that age just like us, living somewhere off in a drawer. This is what you make of it. Yeah, we play to win, living like we're under the lights of the stadium. Fight until the day that God decides to wave us in. Right until He waves us in. It's my city, childhood, my life. That's right, under those lights. My city, childhood. That's right, me house, my oh my. Come on. My city, childhood, my life, that's right, under
those lights. It's my city, childhood, my life, in the house. My, oh my, rest in peace.